Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
I wonder how you feel right now. Do you feel happy? Do you feel relaxed? Completely stressed out about Christmas? Maybe you feel excited because you've, I don't know, this is the third day of your retirement, for example, because you finished up last Friday. Or maybe it's the third day of your holidays too. Because you finished up. Or there might have been plenty of things happening in your life. You might even feel grumpy and frustrated and sad even and struggling to understand why. How we feel at any given moment is due in large part to our moods, which have a massive influence over how we feel, how we think, the things we do, our energy and motivation levels. Most of the time, however, we're not even aware that we have a mood or how it affects us, I guess. We're just angry and there's a good reason for it too. Tonight's program, we're going to take a closer look at what is mood and some of the things that we can do to influence it. Joining us is clinical psychologist Dr. Sarah Edelman for the final time this year. Sarah, of course, is author of Change Your Thinking. Sarah, good evening to you and welcome to Nightlife.
Thank you. Well,
last,
hi, Philip.
Last time for the year.
Yeah, and hello to all the listeners out there too.
Yes, no, great to have you with us. What's the difference between between mood and emotion?
Well, we all know emotions. We've all had experiences of being angry or anxious or frustrated or guilty or ashamed. But emotions are generally fairly short term. They're sort of often triggered by particular events in our lives. And most of the time we feel that sort of emotion for, you know, sometimes minutes, sometimes a bit longer. It may in some cases be hours or even a day, but it generally tends to pass fairly quickly. Mood tends to sit in the background, even in the background of our emotions. And most our mood can sort of move in one direction or another. It can be neutral, which it is most of the time. Sometimes it's positive, sometimes it's negative. We often refer to it as, you know, high or low or neutral. But really, we're talking about the same thing. We're talking about a general sense of well-being. And that tends to sort of be there in the background all the time.
Mm. What sorts of things typically affect our mood?
Well, our biology affects it to some degree, our history, so the things that we've sort of experienced in the past will influence our mood, and our current environment, the things that are happening in our lives right now. So, for example, if you're sleep-deprived and you're feeling tired a lot of the time, your mood is perhaps likely to be low, and that may be for biological reasons as well. Or if positive things have happened, or you've had some lovely interactions with friends or with neighbours, and you're feeling sort of generally more upbeat, your mood's better. Sometimes it's just being able to clear a slate, you know, being able to finish off a task that's been sort of weighing down on you for a period of time, and once that's done, you just feel better.
You often can't pinpoint whether you're in a good mood or a bad mood, can you? I mean, how do you tease it out from feeling happy or sad?
You can, but you would need to stop and actually close your eyes. So there's an exercise you can do and it's just like a mindfulness exercise where you close your eyes and you notice and just notice what's going on for you right now, what's going on in your body, how you're feeling right now. Notice your mood. Are you feeling good or bad or neutral? And if you actually stop and observe, you will notice it. But much of the time we just don't because we're so busy sort of getting on with our lives and focusing outwardly.
Yeah, exactly. Mood affects the way we think, doesn't it?
Yes.
We think differently.
we do think differently. When we are in a good mood, we are more optimistic. We have a stronger belief that the things we try are more likely to be successful. We even project more positive feelings from other people, so we kind of perceive people as being more supportive and more friendly. On the other hand, when your mood is low, you're more likely to have more negative views about yourself. You're more likely to have more negative views about the world, and you're also more likely to project sort of negative intention or negative feelings from other people as well. So it actually affects the way that we think and the meanings that we give to all sorts of things happening in our lives.
So apart from thinking, it affects our energy and behaviour too, doesn't it?
Yes. So when we are in a good mood, we physically feel more energy. So we're more willing to sort of get out and do things. And it may be that we even sort of get out and do some housework or wash the windows or do something physical. But we're also behave differently when we're when we're in a good mood. So we tend to take more risks. We're more confident. We reach out to people. We're more perky. We're more social. And in fact, often you can actually see whether a person's in a good mood or a bad mood just by their body language. And I know someone who was saying to me, you know, I always knew as soon as my father walked into the door after work, I always knew whether he was in a positive mood or a negative mood.
People even often before, say that, don't they?
Yeah, even before he sort of said anything. And what they're really referring to is the body language. It's the stance, it's the posture, it's the facial expression.
Mm.
And then they might just say one or two words or a short sentence, and you know straight away that this person is in a really low or negative mood. And so we can pick up a lot of things through behaviour. Our behaviour actually reflects what's going on in our mind.
Mm. And mood influences decisions as well.
Yes. So, interestingly, we are much more likely to take risks. We're much more likely to agree to things that we might later regret. We might agree to more sort of radical schemes that we you know, might be financial schemes or business ideas or so on if we're excited and if we feel in a positive mood. When people fall in love, for example, their mood is high, they sort of feel elated, they're much more likely to make perhaps irrational decisions or sometimes bad decisions. They might, you know, put a deposit on a home which they later regret, or they might sort of go out and book a holiday for in 12 months' time when, you know, when this relationship will well and truly be gone by then. But because they're feeling excited and elated and their mood is elevated, they sort of have these, you know, these expectations that things will continue to be positive.
Mm. One of the things that affects our mood is how much we achieve in a day. Example.
Yeah, people actually...
That certainly applies to me.
I think it's true for almost everyone. I think that we're almost programmed by evolution. And I guess, you know, there are evolutionary benefits in being focused on getting things done and being productive. But for most of us, we often measure our day by how much we've achieved. So if we've had a really productive day, got lots of things done, we feel satisfied, our mood is good. And if you think it was one of those days where you sort of started doing all sorts of things, you got distracted, you never sort of got anything done, there's a whole lot of outstanding tasks that didn't get sort of ticked off, our mood tends to be sort of uncomfortable, or we don't feel happy or satisfied with our day. So that actually plays a really important role on our overall mood, particularly at the end of the day.
Yeah, I don't know why it is, but you know, if I've ticked off the list, I feel.
Yeah. There's a feeling of satisfaction. You can relax and you feel good, and you've kind of earned your, you know, earned your day today. You can earned feeling good.
You haven't wasted it.
Yeah.
So that, well, which leads to the obvious question, I suppose: is our mood something that we can control?
To some extent, there's certain things that we can do to lift our mood. The most obvious thing is physical exercise. Mm. So exercise actually has a physiological effect on mood. We have the effect of endorphins.
What is that? Is it a chemicals?
They're an opiate. They're a natural endogenous opiate.
Because exercise makes you feel better, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
I mean, apart from other things, it does make you feel better.
It lifts mood. If you feel better, because it lifts mood, and in fact, it's prescribed for people who suffer from depression. It's one of, you know, it's for mild depression, it's as effective as antidepressant medication. It is a really effective drug. The only problem, of course, is when people feel depressed, they sometimes don't have the energy or the motivation to exercise. But exercise is one of the really positive things you can do. The other thing that's interesting is even keeping gratitudes. And gratitudes is writing down the positive things that have happened in your day, every day, and just three things every day. And people who keep gratitude generally find that it actually is quite mood lifting. It just makes you more conscious of the things
again.
Happening
in your life. Say that again. Do what?
So three things every day. At the end of the day, before you go to sleep, you have to stop and write down. You can put in your phone, or you can write on in your little diary, three good things that you're grateful for. And you get in the habit of actually looking for positive things during the day, because you know you have to report at the end of the day.
What if nothing much happened?
You've always got things. It may be, no, it depends. You're just thinking big picture things. But of course, you can talk about feeling grateful for, you know, a conversation that you had at the bus stop, or a song that you heard that really sort of brought back pleasant memories, or the fact that you got home and you were able to relax, and you know, and you vegged out in front of you, you know, just an interesting, or just interesting TV show or you just read a book, there's always things to be grateful for. There's dozens of things that you could actually write down
I had a damn fine pie for lunch.
Yeah, and I enjoyed my lunch. Or, yeah. You know, often it's just a brief interaction with another person, or you got something done at work. And so gratitudes are quite effective as well. The other thing, of course, is social activity. We are social creatures. We get a lot of pleasure out of spending time with people. And just interacting with others can make us feel lifted and more positive.
You know, when you're trying to get to sleep, I mean, this is a whole other area, I know.
Sure. No, that's okay.
But when you're trying to get to sleep, sometimes it is helpful. I find it sometimes helpful to think about certain things. They seem to be calming things that will then lead you into sleep, not necessarily make you go to sleep.
Can you give me an example?
They're often quite obscure. They're just.
So it just gives your mind something to focus on to stop it from scattering to other
issues. For me, it's thinking about a place I have been. There's a place that that I love being in, and if I think about that place, I don't know. It has a calming effect. I usually find that it's a way to get to sleep.
Yeah.
Do you think mood is the same?
Force
yourself to think about certain things, your mood will elevate.
You can choose to think about a holiday that you're looking forward to. So it's something that is to come in the future, which would be mood elevating. I mean, you may sometimes feel that reminiscing about something that you've already experienced, but looking forward to something that is coming can make you excited, can make you
Anticipation. Anticipation of the journey is always better than the journey. And then the journey is always better than the destination.
And look, sometimes savouring is part of the experience as well, looking back at the really sort of the highlights and the positive things that you've had. And if it's been a really sort of positive experience, you can sometimes get pleasure just from the actual savouring. And that can also be a mood lifting effect as well.
I relate to that. And I think there's a word for it. There's a German word for the joy that you get from anticipating something without necessarily having it.
There may be. Just one other thing I should also mention is music. For many people, music is mood lifting. And sometimes, you're just walking through a store or just accidentally hearing some music that, that sort of brings you back to times in the past, and you just feel lifted by that music.
Some people get affected, their mood gets affected by the weather.
Yes, I think a lot of people are affected by the weather.
Constantly gloomy skies can make people gloomy.
In the most extreme case, there is a condition called seasonal affective disorder, or SAD, and that is largely in Scandinavian countries and in the Northern Hemisphere, where people have very long winters where they don't see any daylight for a long time. And those people actually go through really a depression or a period of prolonged depression just because of the absence of light. But in Australia, we don't really get that condition because we have a reasonable amount of sunlight, but we do have a lot of people. In fact, it could be as much as 50% of the population who will say their mood is affected by the weather.
Wow.
And I'm certainly one of these people. I think I said to you before, I moved from Melbourne to Sydney, and one of the reasons was because I just found the weather so grey. And I'm not very good with the cold. Sydney works a lot better for me. But the thing that I really love about Sydney is blue skies. You get a lot of blue skies. And when you wake up in the morning and there's a blue sky, very, very often it's going to be blue all day. And just that feeling of when the sun is shining, there is something, for me and for many people, something mood-enhancing about it. But I've also spoken to a number of people who just don't get that at all.
I do.
You feel that too?
I'm on top of the world.
Yeah. And you notice your mood is good because the sun's shining.
Yeah. Yes, I think that's right. Are some people more prone to experiencing positive or negative mood?
Yes. So some people are more predisposed to just being low generally, and that may be as a result of sometimes you just inherit that sort of biological disposition. Sometimes early life experiences can make us more predisposed to getting down. The condition, there's a sort of a general condition called dysthymia or dysthymic personality, which is a tendency to just kind of be low a lot of the time. And, you know, people can sort of lift out of it at times, but the disposition is there. And other people, just through a total accident of genetic lottery, happen to get a really good hand and have just a sunny disposition and generally tend to be in a pretty good mood much of the time. And if any of your listeners out there have that sunny disposition, well, consider yourself blessed, because it does make your life a lot happier and a lot easier.
That's true, actually. Mm. That is true. Some people are just inherently cheerful, I think.
Mm. Yeah.
I think I'm a bit like that.
Are you?
Yeah, I think I'm a bit like that.
That makes you very fortunate.
There's also, my texter says, there's also sad in reverse, people who hate hot weather.
Yes, I think that's a really good point. And, in fact, I've also come across people who don't like not just the heat but the sunshine, actually prefer winter and prefer grey days. So, yeah, go figure. We're all very different. But, yes, certainly the heat a lot of people dislike.
My texter has texted. I'm going to take this as a compliment.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to you, Phil. That puts me to sleep. Seriously, listening to the radio helps heaps to go to sleep.
No,
I really do take this as a compliment. Yeah. That's fine. It's late at night. It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And the nice thing is that you know, that you can sort of let go of your usual thoughts and concerns and cares and sort of surrender to the voice on the radio.
Because we're here.
You're here. You're present. You're part of your life.
Mm.
And you give us something else to think about. So you sort of drift off with whatever it is that you're talking about.
Thank you, Joe. Joe says, my GP put me on antidepressants 3 months ago. It was life-changing. For me, my moods, exercise, health. I didn't realise how sick I was before. Yeah. Look, that leads to an interesting question, actually, Sarah, and that is mood just chemical, do we think, or not? Or do we know?
That is, I mean, chemical factors or brain factors definitely affect mood. Mm. I guess it's in the end what our thoughts. I mean, you can even put thoughts down to electrical nerve impulses. But I'm interested in, was it Joe who made that comment?
Yeah.
And the comment that I didn't even realise how sick I was. Mm. And I think that's one of the issues, that people get used to feeling low, and especially if they've felt low for years, they often don't realise that that there is another way, or that this is actually a disorder and they could be feeling better. So just realising, and for some people it's just taking antidepressant medication for the first time and realising that there's another way that they could be feeling. So,
yeah, I had a friend years ago and I said that. I said, you know, I generally feel optimistic most days. And she said, I have never felt like that. Like never.
We are so varied. You see people and you sort of assume we're kind of all the same, but we are so varied, and people's experiences, the people's internal experiences are so varied, and the things you take for granted, Philip.
Tell us about that Facebook, the idea of mood contagion, and that it was an interesting Facebook experiment some years ago,
which caused a huge outcry later. Yeah. So this was in 2012, I think, and they decided to do a scientific study looking at whether they could manipulate mood by manipulating the feed that went through to Facebook users. So it was a sample size of about 700,000, so really large sample size, and they deliberately manipulated the material that went on the feed, and half the people got more positive words and more positive notions, and the other half had feed that had more negative words. And it just lasted for 1 week. And then after a week, they then followed what people posted on their own feed, and they actually found that they would post material that was congruent with what they had experienced before. So those who had negative words on their Facebook site were posting more negative posts, and vice versa. Mm. Now this became public, created a huge storm. People felt outraged. They felt manipulated.
Yeah.
There was also some criticism of the actual methodology and whether it was even scientifically true to say that this was the effect of mood contagion. Because you could argue that even if it was true that it influenced the type of words that you use, does that necessarily mean that your mood was affected? I mean, were you actually affected? I mean, maybe, but it really wasn't a test of mood. It was a test of what people then posted on their own Facebook site. But the very fact that you can influence that by exposing people, you expose someone to enough of a particular sort of type of language that they will then respond in kind is interesting.
Indeed. Thank you, Alan from Portland. who I help get to sleep. Oh. That's okay. He said, no, I didn't. thanks for telling me who you are, Alan. Lil says, living in the tropics, I really love rainy grey days. So there's so much sunshine. Also, I never hear the end of the quiz. It relaxes me and I go to sleep.
Yeah, there you go.
Lil.
Yeah, yeah.
Matt's on the line. Is he? No, actually. Is that you, Matt?
Good evening. Yes.
Yeah. Hi, Matt. Yeah.
Loving the show. It's a first for me. So thank you very much. Yeah, my question is, I'd love some narrative around the idea. Well, not the idea. Sometimes I have a really nice dream during the evening and it can make me feel really good for the day. I can have a real bummer of a dream and it really drags me down through the day. I was looking for some narrative around that, how that actually happens, because I can't figure it out.
Yeah, it's interesting, Matt. Our dreams reflect what's happening and how we're feeling during the day. So often the dream will sort of really be a reflection of something that was already sort of sitting in the back of your mind and possibly unconscious mind, and it'll bring it to the fore. Sometimes it can be just a really disturbing concept, and sometimes you may not be able to remember the entire dream, but you remember fragments of it. And because dreams actually reflecting emotional states anyway, they can make us feel sort of very negative if it's sort of bringing up negative perceptions. And the interesting thing about dreams is they're metaphors. So they kind of makes no sense. They're sort of nonsensical, or you get bits and pieces of fragments of things that make no sense, but they're actually metaphors. And below that is more the felt sense. The dream is actually giving you a felt sense of whether things are good in your life or whether things are negative in your life. And that's really what you're picking up, you know, that felt sense of not good. Or good, or safe or unsafe. A lot of our dreams are about feeling safe or unsafe.
Well, that's great. That's offered a lot of clarity. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Man. Thanks for the question.
Good on you, Matt. Bye-bye. Rachel from Katoomba says, Phil, could you ask Sarah to comment on the influence of hormonal changes over women's menstrual cycle in relation to mood?
Yes, hormones play an important role. And for some women, you may have heard of premenstrual dysphoric disorder, which is a mood disorder which happens once a month prior to your period. And it can last for something like almost up to 2 weeks. I mean, for most women, it's a few days. Mm. It's just a few days prior to the start of the period. And it can be like a severe depression. Once a month. For some women, it's just kind of a little bit of feeling a bit sensitive, a bit teary, a bit vulnerable. But it's very variable, and it is now in the current edition of the DSM, which is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. So it had sort of been recognised up until, you know, or vaguely sort of written about up until a few years ago. But in the current version of the DSM, which is the most up-to-date one, we actually recognise that it's a disorder, and it affects about 3% of women who are menstruating, who actually get a sort of severe problems sort of each month. Is that I suppose Rachel's not on the phone on the
no,
line?
No, so
so that may be something that she she's experiencing.
Yeah, okay. Adolescents are particularly prone to moon swings, aren't they?
Yes, yes. Actually, someone was saying to me, you are only ever as happy as your least happy child. And I think that's so true. And I think for many parents, you know, the really difficult bit is in adolescence. And again, because their brain is changing, they're undergoing enormous physical changes, hormonal changes, but also the brain is changing really rapidly. And adolescents are often very moody. They can get very excited and be very sort of positive one moment, and then the next they can be extremely negative and critical and sad and hopeless and depressed. So you see lots and lots of changes. And also they tend to have an effect on the whole family. So,
well, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, families can be affected by moods. And I know a fellow who's. He said all my childhood, the home was just infected by Dad's bad mood.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, when we talk about mood contagion, and I know we were talking about it in relation to Facebook, I think it's much more relevant when we look at how it functions in families, and sometimes just one person who's depressed can have a huge impact on the whole family, and it can be the adolescent. But when a parent is depressed, that can be really tough as well, because they play such an important role, especially when the kids are small and sort of needing to interact with the parents. And it can be very tough on the poor parent as well, of course, but tough on everybody.
Sometimes hanging around with people who are in a good mood can make your bad mood worse,
I guess if you're feeling very low and you've got somebody who's kind of very chirpy, it can be grating, but it also makes you feel more disconnected. It also it sort of feels like there's a bigger distance between where you are and where you want to be or what's normal. And sometimes you actually feel more drawn to people who are just quiet or a little bit more somber. And even in music, people often will be more drawn to sad music or sad poetry and actually get comfort from things that are sad, because it sort of reminds us that we're not alone, that sadness and emotional pain is something that exists throughout, you know, human experience and human history.
Exactly. We're talking moods with Dr. Sarah Edelman, clinical psychologist. If you've liked to join our conversation or ask a question, we've got some lines free. 1-300-800-222. 1-300-800-222. Text to 0467-922-702. Kristen says, Sarah, I find my mood fluctuates with the amount of coffee I drink. I'm usually consuming 3 to 5 cups a day. Am I okay?
I'd like to know, and pity if we haven't got Kristen on the line, because I'd like to know whether her mood goes up or down. I actually have seen both. And some people will say, when I drink coffee, I actually find I feel more alive, I feel more energized, and I feel better. And I'm not sure if that's what Kristen's referring to or the other way around. I would have thought by the time you're drinking 5 cups, you're reasonably desensitized to it, although, you know, maybe not. I mean, it would certainly have less effect on you than if you're only drinking 1 cup a day. But some people actually use coffee as a way of sort of staying upbeat and also sort of maintaining energy levels to be able to sort of get through the things that they're meant to, that they're wanting to do.
Yes, exactly. Lorraine, hello.
Hello.
Hi, Lorraine.
Hello. I love your program, I must say.
Thank you, Lorraine.
My question is, the coffee was almost leading into it, but when you're hungry and your mood drops away seriously, rather than eating all the worst things, is that part of what's changing your mood, that starvation or just being hungry or thirsty even?
I think...
The old hangry thing.
Yeah, the hangry thing. Yeah, I think... But we feel agitated and irritable when we're hungry. So when you get low blood sugar, you're getting messages sort of back to the brain saying, you know, I need to, you know, this needs to be addressed. And so we do have that sort of discomfort. I don't know whether we'd sort of classically call that low mood, although I suppose low mood is part of it. It's more kind of an agitation and an irritability and a wanting something. And I guess there's sort of that drop in energy as well, which can kind of make us feel a little bit low. But it's interesting that you bring up food, because diet also has a really important effect on mood. So when we look at things that are generally good for our physical health, they're also good for our mental health. So regular physical exercise, a healthy diet, eating regular meals and balanced meals is actually one of the best things that you can do for your overall mood, to reduce your risk of depression, and just for feelings of well-being.
Good. And sorry.
Go ahead. And what's been your experience, Kristen?
Oh, just dropping, you know, just getting really hangry and then eating the wrong things like chocolate and...
Yes.
Isn't that funny, Lorraine? When you're at restaurant, you know all the ads which say, you know, if you're a snack, have a chocolate bar. It's just completely wrong, isn't it? Because it's the worst possible thing. Yeah. If you're hungry, it's the worst possible thing to have.
And in fact, when we look at the sort of the research literature on things like binge eating or overeating or eating the wrong thing, The problem is that you allow yourself to get hungry. When your blood sugar is low, you are much more likely to overeat, and you're much more likely to binge eat and to eat the wrong things. And the secret is to not let yourself go hungry, to sort of to eat on a fairly regular basis, even if you have little snacks, even if you snack on nuts or fruit or, you know, a bit of bread or whatever it is. But and even, you know, sometimes people are going out for dinner and they won't eat till about 8, and, you know, and they've had lunch at 12, you know, know, it's a long time. By the time they eat, they're sort of ravenous and they eat too much and eat all the wrong things. So I always recommend to people to have some, you know, have a snack before you go. Have a light little snack so that you're not going to go there with an empty stomach and then end up eating the wrong things. But that really is the secret. If you maintain sort of reasonably level amounts of blood sugar, you are far less likely to eat the wrong thing.
So then how does that fare with when people are now talking about intermittent fasting, where you fast for hours and...
Well, that's a whole different ball game. If you're doing that, then you can't do what I'm suggesting.
Yeah, no, I think what you're suggesting...
Yeah, I mean, the intermittent fasting works for some people, for a small percentage of the population, but I guess for most people, it probably isn't going to be something that they do.
Right.
And,
No, that sounds very good too. Keep eating the right things.
Yep. Have some nuts, Lorraine.
Thank you very much.
See you.
Bye.
Yes. Milo, hello.
Compliments of the season, Philip.
Yes, well, and likewise, Milo.
My experience is a very interesting subject. My experience, I worked for the same company for 32 years.
Mm-hmm.
In the 70s, 80s and 90s. And from the age of 20 to the age of 50 something. And my three children and my wife would know immediately when I walked into the door that I was in a mood. And that was just brought about by, you know, working with horrible people and the work that you do. I was in the retail industry, but anyway.
Yeah.
And the impact, and my situation wasn't like your friend whose father was moody all the time.
Mm.
I was in and out of moods, depending on work and all that sort of stuff. But my family could, and the stresses at work, you shouldn't bring them home, but my family would know as soon as I walked in the door, body language and the first thing I said or the first thing you said, they would know.
Uh-oh.
And you shouldn't be like that, you know, that's wrong.
Yeah, and that's the really interesting, Milo. I'm sure a lot of the listeners here would probably be able to relate to that to some degree. I think the first step in all of that is to even be aware that it's happening, because often people are in a low mood or they're ropeable, they've had a really bad day at work and they're kind of low. And without awareness, you have sort of no control over it. And without awareness, you're more likely to perhaps, you know, snap at other people or sort of let it out on innocent parties. Sometimes called displaced anger or displaced negative emotions, and people who really aren't responsible for the way you're feeling sometimes get that.
Yeah.
So,
or worse, doctor. You know, a lot of people would go to drink.
Yes.
And try and knock out that moodiness and the mental health issues that they suffer from, and not speak to anyone about it and not go and get treatment, you know?
That is such a good point, that for a lot of people they try and numb their mood by using either drugs or alcohol, and I guess alcohol is probably the most common. So again, a lot of this comes down to self-awareness, recognizing it, recognizing patterns in your behavior, noticing that you're doing the same thing, you know, several times a week or, you know, far too frequently, making a decision that you don't want to keep doing this. It sounds like you've got a bit more insight now, perhaps, than you had at the time.
Enormously.
Which would be useful for future times. But just stopping, making a decision, even talking to your family and loved ones and saying, look, I notice that I'm doing this. It must be really hard for you. I'm really sorry that I'm putting you through this. I'm going to try really hard, and this is what I'm going to do. So that it's, you know, that you make a commitment. Once you've talked about it, it's out in the open, and then you can start sort of making a commitment to change.
I mentioned, you're spot on. I mentioned the 70s, 80s, particularly 70s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was a very different time that we have now in terms of, you know, managing mental health and all of that, general health and so forth. It was, you know, people thought they were bulletproof.
Yeah, and I think for men in particular, I think men have always been reluctant to, historically been reluctant to talk about feelings or emotions or mental health issues, and you know, perhaps you know, we're very reluctant to seek help for it. So that's also been part of the problem, and we're gradually starting to see change, but there's still quite a way to go.
Thank you, Milo.
Thank you for that.
Great comment.
Thank
you.
Thanks, Milo.
Thank you for that.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Thank you. Yes, no. Thoughtful call, too. Daniel, hello.
Oh, hi, guys.
Hi, Daniel.
Can people be addicted to misery? My father, I work in a family business, and he seems to thrive off it, off being miserable, and it's contagious, but he has always been that way, and I wonder if he enjoys it almost.
Yeah, look, I've heard that, you know, I've heard that comment made about people who sort of seem to always be negative. I think when people have been low for a really long time, they don't know any other way. It becomes almost part of their personality. And to have to sort of to be around someone like that, where you're dealing with someone who's low all the time, is very sort of soul destroying, and it's, you know, it's a bit depressing. And after a while, we do tend to get impatient and say, well, look, you know, that they love it, or they're doing it on purpose, or, you know, they could try and be more positive, but they don't want to. I think it's often much more complex than that. I'm not sure that anybody, I mean, in most cases, when I've sort of spoken to people, it's not so much that they enjoy it, they just don't see any other way. And it was interesting, just a little bit earlier, we heard somebody say, you know, I didn't even realise how sick I was until I, you know, got help. And I think that's often true, that people are just miserable and don't even realise that they're ill, or that they have a mental health condition, and therefore don't know what to do about it. I don't know if your father would be the sort of person that would be willing to seek help, or to you know, even to talk to his GP about it. But sometimes even sort of asking the question can be sort of the start of, you know, some positive change.
Yeah, I would never have classed it as a depressive thing or anything. He's not in that sort of way. He just likes to complain almost, but it comes out as misery. Mm. And it is, can be tough in the line of farming and things like that. And it just, I did remember reading somewhere, and I couldn't remember if it was a proper study or not, whether people claimed it was sort of an addictive thing, but then, as you say, it sort of, as it lingers on for long enough, it can manifest as their personality.
There's a condition called persistent depressive disorder. Used to be called dysthymic disorder, but again, it's sort of the name's been changed in the last edition of the DSM, and it's actually people who are kind of negative. So it's like a mild depression. It doesn't sort of fit the criteria of a full-blown major depression, but it can last for years or decades, and it can almost be like a depressive personality style. And they may not necessarily be, you know, obviously depressed, but there's kind of that sort of just everything is negative. If someone is thinking negatively all the time, that's telling us that their mood is very low. Thoughts are a reflection of our mood. And if what's coming out of your mouth is constantly negative, it's actually saying you're really unhappy in there and your mood is very low. So it would be really, I mean, if he would be open to it, I'd still be sort of trying to encourage him to see a GP. It may be that he has got some, you know, some sort of depressive condition, but, you know, whether or not he'd be willing to look at it is another story.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Good luck with it, Dan. Mm. Thanks, man. Bye-bye. Sally from Wagga Wagga. You're not right, Philip. Chocolate improves my outlook on life every time. It's great. Well, I agree with you, Sally, but not if you're hungry.
Yeah,
no,
actually,
if you're hungry, you don't think it is.
Has been a study, would you believe, looking at whether chocolate can actually be a mood lifter, whether it can actually affect...
Can't it?
Well, there's no evidence it can improve depression. They actually found that it didn't have an effect. but it was interesting that they actually even did a study on it.
Liz in Perth says, I recently discovered Jordan Peterson's work, a lot of which encompasses mood. Is Sarah familiar with it?
I'm not, but I'd love to. What a shame we haven't got her online, because I'd love to hear about it.
Yes. Send us a reference, Liz.
Mm. Or give us a call.
Or give us a call, yes. 1-300-800-222. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Thanks. My texter says, yes, it's a big problem for some people. They're happy to be sad and sad to be happy.
Yeah, I think we often get very we kind of get impatient and a bit unsympathetic with people who are low all the time, because it makes us feel low, and we get a bit judgmental.
There is a big difference, though, isn't there, between a low mood or a bad mood and having a mood disorder.
Yeah.
That's quite a different thing.
It is. And you know, people often sort of confuse the two. But a mood state is transient. It passes. It might go up and down. But it doesn't really affect your life in a really major way other than you don't feel great. When we're looking at a mood disorder, we're actually talking about something that interferes with your ability to function. So when you have a mood disorder, everything is really difficult. Mm. Going to work is difficult. Getting up in the morning is difficult. Choosing what colour socks to wear can be difficult. Having a shower is difficult. So it is much more intrusive in terms of your ability to function and live your life, and it is a different state.
Sure. Pat, hello.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. How do you deal with people who have these large mood swings and who seem to not want to be at some function that you're planning on and just suddenly say, well, we're not coming, I'm not coming, upset.
Pat,
how do you deal with that?
Pat, thank you for bringing this up. Is this a partner or someone in
it's
your life? Your daughter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it possible that she's sort of dealing with her own confidence issues? Or
there's a lot of things.
There's a lot of sort of mental health things.
Yes, she has bipolar.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. Well, that is a mood disorder. Why do you think she doesn't want to go?
I'm not really sure. It seemed, we were having a function tonight and we had friends of hers coming, and then she just said, well, I'm not coming.
Mm. The problem is if you don't actually feel what that person's feeling, it's very hard to kind of make sense of it. But when people are low, they often feel oppressed by having to spend time with other people, being in a room full of people where they're expected to, you know, to socialise and to make conversation can feel overwhelmingly difficult. And sometimes I think we just have to give people permission. If she, you know, I think
she does this often.
Mm.
It's not just once in a while. It's quite often.
But maybe it's because she's uncomfortable in social situations. If you're feeling vulnerable, then being in amongst a group of people is really difficult. Being in social situations where you're sort of expected to chat.
Is it more a sign that there's depression or more so than the bipolar?
Well, bipolar is sort of the broad name for a mood disorder, which includes episodes of depression and also at some stage episodes of feeling elevated. But people with bipolar disorder also very often suffer from anxiety.
Oh, yes.
And so they have, and often it's the anxiety that can make it very difficult, especially in social situations. And sort of generally there's emotions, you know, upsetting emotions.
How should I deal with that? Ignore it, or
I think try to be sympathetic if you can. Mm-hmm. Give her the space that if she doesn't want to participate, that you can understand that maybe you have to factor it in. I would always encourage her. I would always, you know, say, look, you're perfectly welcome. We'd love you to be there, but if you don't want to be there, I can understand.
I do that. I just feel that she's getting bogged down more so. She's getting older, and I'm worrying that it's a little more than bipolar.
Yeah. Oh, well, the thing is with bipolar that there's often a number of problems that come with it. It's not just the depression. It's, as I said, it's anxiety. It might be all sorts of mood problems as well. But it's very tough as a parent of a child who has a mental illness. It is really tough, and you just got to be there for her, I think. But good luck with the Pat.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Good luck, Pat.
That's all right. Bye.
Yeah, thanks. Bye. Hi, Sharon.
Hello.
Hi, Sharon.
Last evening, I just want to talk about mood blaming.
Okay. What does that mean?
Well, when somebody says, you put me...
Okay.
I wouldn't be in a bad mood except for you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess, look, we all have responsibility for our own emotions, and when somebody says, it's your fault, you've put me into a bad mood, it probably says more about their state than about yourself. How do you respond when they say that, Sharon?
Well, exactly how do you respond?
Well, maybe you need to say, I'm sorry that you're feeling low and I'm sorry that you're feeling that way, but I can't take responsibility. I am who I am and I can't take responsibility for it. And just being empathic, being supportive, but not ever taking and saying this is my fault or
Walk away. You just got to walk away, don't you?
Sometimes you just have to walk away, yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Sharon. Thank you. Yes. Wendy, hello. Hi, Wendy. Hello, Wendy. You've got to turn your radio down. Wendy's walked away from the phone. I'll put Wendy back on hold. Sleep deprivation's big, isn't it?
Yes.
So sleep hygiene's a very important thing.
Yeah, that's the other thing that can really affect mood. When we're sleep deprived, our mood is much more unstable. We're much more likely to get low. This is where, again, talking about people with bipolar disorder, they have to really be very careful about sleep and maintain really good sleep hygiene, because if you don't, you're much more likely to have either a manic episode, which is a elevated mood, which is sometimes ends in problems, or a low mood. And just generally for all of us, we function best when we have optimal sleep, when we have a good diet, when we have regular exercise, and when we look after our health.
Yeah. Yes, I was talking to someone today. He said, well, you know, sorry, you know, I'm stressed out because I'm existing on 5 hours sleep. And I said, well, you know, do something about it. No, that's not a given. I mean, unless you're being forced to.
Yeah, but sometimes people can't sleep. I mean, sometimes it's just not allocating the time because you're too busy and sort of going to bed too late. But sometimes
not valuing it. I mean, not valuing that time for sleep, thinking, you know what, I need to look after myself here and give myself time to get. Eight hours of sleep.
Yeah, yeah. And choosing to do that. And then there are a number of, as we said, sleep hygiene things that you can do, including sort of going to bed at the same time each day, getting up even when you're tired, going out into the sunlight when you get up, winding down activities. There's a number of things we can do to try and improve the quality of our sleep. And listening to the radio. If you can't sleep, actually listening to the radio is good sleep hygiene.
Yep. Wendy, we've got her back. Hello, Wendy.
Hello.
Hi, sorry, Wendy.
Having a mouthful of soup before.
Okay.
Something I've been puzzling about. The last year or so, just when I go out, I live near a shopping centre, and you can go out in a good mood and be shopping, and someone will abuse you because you walk past them in the aisle at a supermarket when they're sort of taking over a lot of the space. The other night, I just said sorry as I squeezed past these women, and they called me for all the names under the sun. It's like a road rage has moved into the supermarket aisles and into the shopping centre as well. Another time I got rammed with a toddler in a pram when I was walking past, squeezing through not a gap. I was wide enough. I was just being polite and said, excuse me. And the guy just lifted the front of the pram up and rammed me in the leg.
that sounds terrible.
Yeah, it just seems people are much more angry and they take it out on strangers.
Well, what you're describing is that rudeness or hostile behaviour of strangers. Hopefully it doesn't happen that often, but when it happens, it is very confronting, very disconcerting.
And it ruins my mood.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely. And it would actually have that effect on anyone, Wendy. Generally, and for all of us, we feel warmed and buoyed when we have a positive interaction, when someone says something really nice or makes a comment that's positive, and, you know, that enhances our mood and you might sort of feel lifted. Someone does you a small favour or vice versa.
Yes.
And exactly the opposite happens when you experience rudeness or hostility, particularly, you know, from anybody, but, you know, particularly from strangers. And it does affect your mood for a period of time, and there's really nothing you can do about it. It just wears off after a day or so. But
it seems to be more frequent in the last year or so, and I'm wondering whether, again, people are just more stressed in daily life, or maybe a lot of them now are working to time schedules where they have to be at certain places and certain times, and with more traffic now they're feeling stressed and they take it out on strangers.
I'm not aware that it's more frequent, but certainly when people are in a hurry, they're more likely to be abrasive, they're more likely to be impatient, and you're more likely to get that sort of rude behaviour, which is very unpleasant.
Yes, I'm sorry to hear that, Wendy. Alan from Mildura says, Phil, I find being with my pet dogs puts me in a good mood. Plus, they always seem to be in a good mood anyway.
They are. That's in true. Fact, it's true.
That is true. In Why fact, are I think dogs always in a good mood?
Ruby Wax says in her book, our pets are happier than we are.
They are.
And in fact, being with dogs and being with animals, especially loving, warm, affectionate animals, is very mood enhancing. And
it's like that old joke, isn't it? Yeah. You know, how to find out if your best friend or your dog loves you more. Yeah. Lock them both in the boot, and after an hour, open it up and see who's going to see you.
I haven't heard that. That's very good.
Sarah, it's been a pleasure as always. Look, thank you for the year and all the sage and wonderful advice that you have dispensed. Well, also just the conversations too.
My pleasure. And all the very best to all our listeners for the new year as
yes,
well.
Yes, and I'm sure it's reciprocated likewise. Dr. Sarah Edelman, clinical psychologist, and she'll be back next year.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.